culture, and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. Yes, a great day when the good news appears to be that things with the Thanksgiving holiday, planes arriving on time, arriving safely, crowds managing to somehow find a way on the highways and on the byways and on the airplanes and even the trains. No rail strike yet. And no, that wouldn't be aimed at passenger rail, but it would impact passenger rail because some of the tracks that passenger rail runs on belong to the freight companies that would be the objects of a strike. Let us hope we continue to avoid that. We also have, and it's one of those things that I appreciate every single year, because part of the Thanksgiving tradition, at least in our household, is to take a look at two reviews that were two editorials that were written by Vermont Royster, who was a longtime editor at the Wall Street Journal. And they've been appearing every year for Thanksgiving ever since 1961. So that's a long time. And the second part of these two-part editorial is called And the Fair Land. And it begins by saying, anyone whose labors take him into the far reaches of the country, as ours lately have done, is bound to mark how the years have made the land grow fruitful. This is indeed a big country, a rich country, in a way no array of figures can measure, and so in a way past belief of those who have not seen it. Even those who journey through its northeastern complex into the southern lands across the central plains and to its western slopes can only glimpse a measure of the bounty of America. And a traveler cannot but be struck on his journey by the thought that this country one day can be even greater. America, though many know it not, is one of the great underdeveloped countries of the world. What it reaches for exceeds by far what it has grasped. So the visitor returns thankful for much of what he has seen, and in spite of everything, an optimist about what his country might be. Yet the visitor, if he is to make an honest report, must also note the air of unease that hangs everywhere. And again, the idea that he was writing in 1961, part of that unease right now, in a way very different from 1961, involves our politics. And one would like to believe that with the midterms behind us, and with no radical change, really, in the composition of the Congress, the Republicans may end up gaining seven seats in the House of Representatives. It'll be below 10. But enough for the Republicans to take over the House. But will that result in a more constructive governance in our country than we have had before? Well, with this new emphasis on rushing right directly from a new Congress, a Republican Congress with Republican chairs of all the major committees, meaning the Judiciary Committee, which is going to be taken over by Jim Jordan, or James Comer, who's going to be taking over the Oversight Committee, Armed Services, Foreign Affairs Committee, all Republican leadership, and is really the very best thing that they can look forward to is fighting to impeach a cabinet secretary. Really? The House Republican leader, Kevin McCarthy, soon to be speaker, was at the southern border in El Paso, Texas today. And he said this about Secretary Alexander Mayorkas, Alejandro Mayorkas. Listen, clip six.
Our country may never recover from Secretary Mayorkas' dereliction of duty. This is why today I am calling on the secretary to resign. He cannot and must not remain in that position. If Secretary Mayorkas does not resign, House Republicans will investigate every order, every action, and every failure will determine whether we can begin impeachment inquiry. If Secretary Mayorkas was in charge of any company, he would have been fired by now for the failures of what he has caused. The American public deserve more, deserve better, and expect more within their government. Enough is enough. We will do whatever it takes. This is my commitment to the men and women of the Border Patrol and to the citizens of the United States of America.
Okay, this is his commitment. You would think, wouldn't you? What got the Republicans the ability to win a majority in the House of Representatives, and by a very narrow margin, but they won, was not the I word impeachment, not the I word investigation. It was the I word inflation. And there's information now that the cost of a Thanksgiving meal is up 20%. 20% from last year for a typical Thanksgiving. Everybody feels that. And the whole idea of impeachment, the reason that I opposed both Trump impeachments was not because I didn't think he had done anything wrong. He did plenty wrong. The reason that the impeachment was a stupid idea was it wasn't going anywhere. When politics is just gestural, when we're just showing off for our base, it was very obvious there would never be the Senate votes to remove President Trump from office. There will never be the Senate votes to remove Alejandro Mayorkas from office. The Democrats are going to have at least 50 seats in the Senate. If Warnock beats Herschel Walker in the runoff in Georgia, the Democrats have 51 seats. Either way, there is zero chance to get 17 Democrats to vote to remove a Secretary of Homeland Security from office. And, okay, maybe this is all some kind of attempt to try to embarrass him to resign, to try to force him to resign. But by making such a huge deal of it, going to the border and making that statement, this was Representative Brian Babin, who was standing alongside McCarthy. And again, trying to focus all of this negativity on the fool's errand of trying to impeach Secretary Mayorkas. Clip 7.
Anyone paying attention at all can see that Joe Biden's responsible for the worst border crisis in the history of our country. No matter how many times Secretary Mayorkas lies about it, under oath, we know that the border is simply not secure. The truth is, the southern border barely exists anymore. The Border Patrol isn't allowed to do their job. What heroes we have that we've met with today that work for our Border Patrol but not allowed to do their job. This administration has tied their hands so tight that catch and release sometimes is their only option at this point. We've completely lost operational control over this border in spite of what Mayorkas has told us. Transnational criminal organizations, the Mexican drug cartels have taken over. Women and children being assaulted, raped, trafficked, synthetic opioids pouring into the United States. And now we have over 100,000 dead Americans every single year.
Okay, the idea that there is a direct connection between the opioid death, which is a real crisis, a genuine national crisis, and traffic at the border is a very, very tough idea to argue or to prove. We will be right back with what inflation means, and is it true it's moderating?
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products.
And on the Michael Medved show, if the GOP were smart, I mean, really smart, we do have a problem at the border that everyone, obviously, including Democrats and including independents who swayed the election last time away from Republicans. If you want to win those independents, if you want to win some Democrats, if you want to win even a all of the GOP leaners and supporters, then for goodness sake, rather than trying to launch an impeachment, which will achieve absolutely nothing, get together on some kind of bipartisan effort to actually fix a horribly broken and inept plan of border security and immigration. And the two go together, as everybody has known for years. You can't have one without the other. You have to fix the system of immigration, and then, yes, you also have to fix and intensify border security. And it's not just a simple job like building a few more miles of wall. The indication that a bipartisan effort should be popular comes from Senator Mark Kelly, who was just reelected, and he was reelected in a romp, basically. He won by more than 5 points. And Senator Kelly, you'll notice that's not a race that's being challenged in Arizona at all, despite all the noise that you hear about that right now. But Mark Kelly criticized the Democrats' ineptitude in responding to the border crisis in an interview with the Washington Post yesterday. The Democratic senator was blunt when he was asked if he thought his party was doing a good job in recognizing the magnitude of the problem at the southern border and the frustrations from Americans of every party about whether or not it was being addressed. Absolutely not. Not even close, he told the paper. Not even close that they were doing a good job. When I first got to Washington, it didn't take me long to realize that there are a lot of Democrats who don't understand our southern border and a lot of Republicans who just want to talk about it, he explained. One Democrat pushes back against the Republican threat to concentrate on an impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. This is Representative Veronica Escobar, a Democrat of Texas. Listen, clip 8.
We've tried it the Republican way, which is addressing migration and immigration as a border-only policy. It's expensive, and it's been a failure. The plan to attempt to impeach the secretary doesn't get us any closer to any solutions. It doesn't offer any tangible results.
and no, it doesn't. And by the way, if they get impeachment through the House, and see, this was the problem with the impeachment of Clinton, which was a mistake. The impeachment of Trump twice, which was a mistake, both times. And for any impeachment of Biden or for any of his cabinet members, I mean, for goodness sake, when the founders set up the impeachment process to make it so very, very difficult, how is it very, very difficult? Because you need to get two-thirds. And there are very few times in our history where one party has had two-thirds or more of the U.S. Senate. And even if you have one party with that kind of control, to have party discipline where everybody in your side votes to remove the president from office the first time, the only time, that's one of the reasons, and I've argued this historically, a lot of people take the assumption that Richard Nixon, if he had not resigned, would have surely been removed from office. And this, people conclude, even before there were any impeachment proceedings against him, before he was even formally impeached by the House of Representatives. He was about to be. The Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe it was Judiciary Committee, it may have been a different House committee. But Peter Rodino, who was the chairman, a congressman from New Jersey, Nixon, a committee had already voted with a few Republican votes to move forward with articles of impeachment. But it never got to the Senate, never got to that crazy situation of needing to find two-thirds of the vote. The Republicans, by the way, had two-thirds of the Senate in 1868 when they impeached President Andrew Johnson. But there were seven Republicans who went the other way with all of the Democrats to defend President Johnson. And to be fighting over this right now, rather than a more constructive policy at the border, it's almost as stupid. I think not quite, but almost as stupid and almost as misguided and almost as doomed to failure as fighting endlessly to overturn elections. There's a fine piece by Henry Olson, and I think it's a thought-provoking and important piece about what's going on in Arizona right now. And we'll talk maybe next week to Henry about it, because I assume that they're still going to be having the effort to overturn an election that was not that close. There were 17,000 votes separating the two gubernatorial candidates in Arizona. And Olson says that Arizona is home for many of the most fervent true believers in the election fraud myth. Their ire is directed toward election authorities in Maricopa County, home of Phoenix, where roughly 60% of the state's votes are cast. After the 2020 election, the purveyors of the fraud narrative pushed the state legislature to authorize the so-called audit of the country, of the county's votes. It was done by a group called Cyber Ninjas. That effort confirmed Joe Biden's victory. Actually, it added to the total of Joe Biden's vote, not taking away from it. But it did nothing to quell the faithful suspicions. This led Arizona Republicans to nominate an entire slate of candidates for statewide office who contended that the election had been stolen. The slate was led by former television news anchor Carrie Lake, whose steadfast advocacy of the election fraud myth was so pervasive that Donald Trump praised her chutzpah. The former president even told Blake Masters, Arizona's Republican Senate nominee, to emulate her. "Look at Carrie," he said to Masters at a taped phone call. "If they say, 'How is your family?' she says the election was rigged and stolen." Is that going to make progress in the days ahead? We will talk about that, and also a crime fighter's tip from Florida, where the police did a remarkably accurate job in going after an arsonist and a very dangerous criminal. We'll talk about that and more coming up on The MedVet Show.
Thank God Talk Radio's there.
The Michael MedVet Show, 1-800-955-1776. The Michael MedVet Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, there is a lot going on in this country right now, particularly a lot of travel. The National Retail Federation supports that right now, with inflation is on everybody's mind, but higher prices on all sorts of items have made people rethink what they're buying and what they're buying even for Thanksgiving. That idea that right now they estimate that the typical cost of a Thanksgiving meal with the same menu you had last year would be about 20% more. And given the fact that the food is expensive when you're getting Thanksgiving food with all of the trimmings and all of the stuffing, that 20% is a lot. It says the National Retail Federation that inflation is at its highest levels since Indiana Jones was bullwhipping Raiders of the Lost Ark at the mall Cineplex. The National Retail Federation predicts that holiday sales in November and December will, despite the inflation, increase 6 to 7% from last year. But that is below the rate of inflation. Also, Bloomberg is saying arrive at the airport early. The Thanksgiving travel rush is back, which is, I guess it's good news because those industries have to live and prosper too. More people are traveling through U.S. airports in the pre-holiday break than in 2019, according to the TSA. On Tuesday, 2,299,346 people were screened in security in American airports versus less than 2 million people in 2019. And the roads will be busy as well, but you knew that. The AAA will be the third busiest Thanksgiving travel year, they say. Third busiest since 2000, which, again, is an indication that people may be feeling better about their ability to go out and enjoy themselves. But that doesn't mean that you should do anything illegal or destructive. There's an arsonist in Florida who led the police on a significant chase, and he was armed. He fired at them, and they eventually caught up with him. And in the process, he was wounded. And it was described this way by the police officials down in the Sunshine State. Clip 17.
So as soon as the pit maneuver occurred, three of our deputies began to shoot at Luke Neely. Lieutenant Rylott shot one time. Deputy Tillery shot four times. Deputy Barnum shot five times. We hit Luke three times, twice in the right leg, once in the left leg, and once in the groin. And we've changed the looks of his groin forever, if you know what I mean.
Neely has been charged with three counts of attempted first-degree murder, arson, seven counts of firebombing, and one count of resisting arrest, with more charges from Hillsborough County are pending. It basically says that when deputies try to stop the vehicle, the pickup truck continued to flee on U.S. 98. Neely was found with a loaded AR-15 and a fully loaded handgun. He was disarmed and taken to the hospital. And what it says in the Tampa Dispatch, it says where he's been treated for non-life-threatening wounds, but is not expected to be able to procreate. Well, this is a gentleman with a criminal history whose a sort of path has been, it seems, dramatically changed. Kamala Harris, again, inspiring people with her visit to the Philippines and talking about her immediate future. This is clip four. Listen.
Well, as the president said, he intends to run, and if he does, I will be running with him. And I have no doubt about the strength of the work that we have done over these past 2 years.
Okay, no doubt about the strength that we have done, but clearly with the approval ratings for both of them, with hers even lower than his, they have to have some doubts about their success. Somebody else with no doubts about success, Carrie Lake, the defeated candidate in the gubernatorial race down in Arizona, had this to say about her prospects at this point of victory after everyone has declared her to have won the silver medal. She finished second in Arizona. That's not winning. She was talking to Steve Bannon on his War Room podcast. Listen, clip three.
We had a movement of We the People, and they don't like We the People being involved in politics. They really don't like it. It's the uniparty that you're talking about. It is the uniparty, and so they don't care if it's a Democrat, and they don't care if it's a so-called Republican, as long as they control that politician. And you're right, they didn't control me. The people of Arizona will be my boss. And I still have hope that we're going to win this, Steve. I really want you to know that. This is not hyperbole. This lawsuit that we will be dropping is going to be devastating, and we will be, I believe we will win this. Oh. Now, you know, what is the system going to look
hang
like?
On, hang judges? On, you're going to win this.
Winning.
Okay, she's going to win this. How exactly? I mean, you cannot manufacture votes. Whatever the president asked for in his phone calls with Brad Raffensperger in Georgia, this is unlikely to work. Now, despite Carrie Lake, Tom Friedman of the New York Times had, I think, a pretty interesting column about words to live by and Thanksgiving. And he says, I always enjoy Thanksgiving, but I'm particularly going to savor this year's in light of the midterm elections. They surface something beautiful and decent and vitally important in the soul of the nation. It was a readiness to defend the core of our democracy, our ability to peacefully and legitimately transfer power when it was under imminent threat. Had we lost our commitment to the solemn obligation that one party smoothly hands off power to another, we'd be totally lost as a country today. But instead, democracy was reaffirmed. Enough Americans, principled Republicans, Democrats, and independents sorted through their ballots and rejected almost all of the high-profile electoral deniers for major state and federal offices. And that is true. And then he has words to live by, including words from George Washington's farewell address, which had a pretty good speechwriter behind it. It was written by Alexander Hamilton. And in 1796, the first president said, "The unity of government, which constitutes you one people, is also now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is a main pillar in the edifice of your real independence, the support of your tranquility at home, your peace abroad, of your safety, of your property, of that very liberty which you so highly prize. You should properly estimate the immense value of your national union to your collective and individual happiness. With such powerful and obvious motives to union affecting all parts of our country, there will always be reason to distrust the patriotism of those who in any quarter may endeavor to weaken its bands." Some pretty great movies coming up, opening today for the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll tell you about two of them that you really ought to see. It's still some of the greatest movie music ever made for one of the greatest movies ever made, it seems to me, E.T. And a guy named Spielberg was the guy who created E.T., and he has a brand new film called The Fabelmans, which is very different. But that is the biggest Oscar contender of the latest from Hollywood. Okay, The Fabelmans is a wonderful film, and we'll tell you about it in a moment. But so is Devotion, which is released today across the country. And you have a chance to see it. We spoke to the author of the book that inspired it. His name is Adam Makos. And the film tells an amazing story about two naval aviators who struck up an unlikely friendship. Jonathan Majors is outstanding, Oscar level, playing the first black naval aviator. And he came into the service and trained as a pilot right after World War II, and then served in Korea. Part of what is so astonishing about this film is the aerial sequences, where they did not use computer-generated aircraft. They were real antique aircraft, Corsairs. And it is, if anything, the flight and fight sequences in the air are more thrilling, if anything, and then in Top Gun Maverick, which was pretty darn good. And even more, the human relationship, especially between the main character played by Jonathan Majors and his wingman, outstandingly played by an actor named Glenn Powell, a white guy from Boston. The relationship between these two, friendship, heroism, sacrifice, it's all there in Devotion.
You're the only person I ever met belonged in the sky. Just remember, you belong down here with us too, okay?
The commanding officer called you one of the best pilots he's ever seen.
It must be hard being the
naval aviator.
The whole world's looking different.
Did you ever think that you'd be in a squadron with a colored aviator?
Lieutenant Tom Hudner.
Jesse Brown. It's good to meet you.
Can't tell you how many times people have told me to give up, quit, die even.
North Koreans came pouring over the 38th parallel.
Our guys need help. The most important thing is this. We bring everyone home.
And that's the ideal. And the film is nearly ideal. And again, the combat sequences and the human interaction and the ongoing struggle against racism, which is part of this film. It is beautifully done. It deserves 4 stars and surely will be remembered, I believe, as one of the best films of 2022. Then we have The Fablemans, which is the latest from Steven Spielberg. As people have probably heard, it's frankly autobiographical. It's about a little kid whose name is Sammy Fableman, who is supposed to be Steven Spielberg in the same situation. His family moves to first Arizona and then later to California, which is a less happy experience for them. The parents are played by Michelle Williams and Paul Dano, both outstanding. And though they have a secret problem in their relationship, which comes out at the time that the main character, little Sammy, is learning how to use cameras and making his own films at home. Listen.
You dismiss what he does. It's playful or imaginative. You could afford to be a little encouraging.
She should have been a concert piano player.
Family, it'll tear you in two.
What kind of movie are you gonna make?
You stop making movies, that'll break your mother's heart.
I don't know what to do anymore.
You do what your heart says you have to.
And that is very much the theme of the film. Michelle Williams is a sure Oscar nominee for this. Judd Hirsch plays an uncle who is visiting on the occasion of a death in the family. But in terms of just the resolute and durable connections of family members, this is an enormously touching film. It's also miraculous. It's over 2.5 hours long, and it doesn't feel like it. I mean, you want it to continue. And especially there is a very funny interchange toward the end, just as the main character is taking his first steps into adult life. There are some adult elements in the film. It's a PG-13 rating. And again, some real pain that the family experiences along the way. It's very hard for me to imagine someone not being moved by this. There is also, by the way, some fairly scary sequences demonstrating anti-Semitism. And the Fablemans 4 stars and playing everywhere. There's also a Disney release. It is from Disney Animation. It is called Strange World, and it's also an attempt to be a family film. The voices of Jake Gyllenhaal and Dennis Quaid, they play father and son. There is also a young son who is, they make a very big point in the movie that he is gay. He's attracted to other boys, which is kind of surprising to see in a Disney film where the whole point is they live in a Shangri-La-like remote wonderland, utopia, but they have to protect it against a sudden sudden threat and then penetrate inside the mountains to see some of the mysteries of nature. The animation is consistently eye-catching and impressive, as you would expect. The musical accompaniment is fine. The voices seem to be wasted because the plot does not seem to have human components. Listen.
Our entire world is in grave danger. I want you to come with me on an expedition.
I'm not my father. He was the explorer.
You're all we got.
Where in the world are we?
We are clearly in uncharted territory.
Hello.
Dad?
Dad?
Grandpa?
I'm a grandpa.
What is this place?
The cliffs are alive, and the waters dissolve the flesh off your bones.
Everything down here is trying to kill us.
We need you to figure this out, otherwise we're doomed. We are doomed! Didn't see that coming.
And again, the movie is intermittently entertaining, but when you see a film where so much of the animation is so spectacular for the eye, and the plot in the best of the Pixar Disney films, those plots often have extremely penetrating characterizations, and people who, even though they are just drawings that are brought to life on screen, or computer generations that are brought to life on screen, they seem highly real and deeply sympathetic. That's not the case here. Strange World, it is rated PG for some moments of intense danger and adventure. And Gabriel Union plays the mother of the young man, and he's portrayed very sympathetically with pro-tolerance and acceptance and pride message. Two stars for Strange World. And coming up on the Medved Show, obviously, tomorrow is Thanksgiving Day. And just to conclude with that Thanksgiving Day, with that classic editorial that that Vermont Royster wrote in this famous editorial from 1961, it's great to hear these words. But we can all remind ourselves that the richness of this country was not born in the resources of the earth, though they be plentiful, but in the men that took its measure. For that reminder is everywhere, in the cities, towns, farms, roads, factories, homes, hospitals, schools, that spread everywhere over that wilderness. We can remind ourselves that for all our social discord, we yet remain the longest enduring society of free men governing themselves without benefit of kings or dictators. Being so, we are the marvel and the mystery of the world. For that enduring liberty is no less a blessing than the abundance of the earth. And we might remind ourselves also that if those men setting out from Delfshaven, meaning the pilgrims, had been daunted by the troubles they saw around them, then we could not this autumn be thankful for their fair land. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and may we find and enumerate and remember